Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today, I have the pleasure to talk to Judith Van Giesen, author of 13 mysteries plus children's books and poetry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I have to say, I read all of your 13 mysteries.
You did?
I did.
Oh, my God. That was a pretty short period of time.
I read a lot, so I did that, yes. And I enjoyed them very much.
Which ones were your favorite?
I really liked, of the Neil Hamel ones, I liked Ditch Rider the best, about the gangs and the girls that run with gangs.
Yeah, and that was really written about my neighborhood.
Really?
Oh, yeah, and the kids in my neighborhood, yep. And they, I mentioned, you know, credited them, and they were very pleased, and, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was, and I just live one lot away from the ditch, and so, you know, I still hang out with, these kids are older now, and they have their own kids, but I still hang out with them, and we go walking on the ditch, and it's great.
Oh, yeah, it was very, no wonder it was so realistic, yeah. And then of Claire's books, I liked The Shadow of Venus the best.
Did you?
I did. I thought that was really interesting. I know that you talked about the girl who, but that was before the Me Too movement. Really prescient of you to write about that.
Well, you mean the homeless woman?
Yes.
Well, I actually met her at the library.
Oh.
You know, I used to spend a lot of time. I mean, well, someone like her, the woman that inspired her. And she was so interesting, and she spent a lot of time at the library because she didn't really have any place to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was a very tough life. And but eventually she moved up to Santa Fe and she got a job.
Oh, that's really a good story.
Doing much better.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was. I stayed in touch with her for a while, yeah.
She was
doing better in her life, yeah.
That's good
to
hear.
But it is such an issue, I know, for UNM, these homeless people in the library, you know?
Yes. But all your books, all of these mysteries, really focus on a controversial issue, environmental issues, wolves, birds of prey, wildfires. Homelessness, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And smuggling.
Well, I hadn't really thought about that.
I enjoyed that aspect of it. They weren't just whodunits, but they really involved something important. One thing I really liked, too, was how in-depth your descriptions of the setting of New Mexico are.
Well, that sure is fun to do.
Well, it's a beautiful place. Uh-huh. I read your biography, and you aren't from, you're actually from the East.
Born in New York. Born in Manhattan.
Well, your books sound like you love New Mexico.
Well, I do.
So your books have won quite a few prizes, too. Two of them are in the 100 Best New Mexico Books. So I like both your protagonists, Neil.
Yeah, they're very different. They're very different, aren't they?
They're very different. That's what I was going to say. What made you switch from Neil to Claire?
Rupert Murdoch. Blame it on Rupert Murdoch.
Okay.
And that's because I was with HarperCollins, and I had this wonderful editor, Eamon Dolan. He was a young Irish guy at HarperCollins. My first book they didn't actually do, but they did the next seven Neil Hamel books, and I liked him so much. And then Rupert Murdoch bought HarperCollins, and he dropped, I don't know, hundreds of authors. What he did was just terrible.
Oh.
It was just devastating. And my editor left, and then there really wasn't any future there. I actually had the same editor that Tony Hillerman had. But Tony Hillerman is still there. Well, he's not alive anymore, but they're still. And I think they published his daughter's books, Anne's books.
Yes.
But, Rupert Murdoch just really changed the nature of HarperCollins. You know, he's trying to make it much more commercial or something. So at that point, you know, because my editor left, it was time to start a new series. So that's when I started The Clarion Years. And I did that because I had been spending a fair amount of time at the library at UNM, and I had friends there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me started on that. And so then I went to my editor found Signet and wanted to publish those, and they signed on 3 books. And then I did 5 there, and then I got a new editor. My editor quit, I guess. It was fine. I don't know really what happened with them. And then I got a new editor. She didn't really like these books. She wanted me to do a thriller.
Oh.
And I'm not a thriller writer.
Right.
So that didn't work out. But that's one of the problems with New York publishing, you know, is the personnel changes so much.
I've heard
and
that.
It can really, it can really interfere with your career.
Evidently, yeah.
You know, when your editor leaves and somebody else comes in. So anyway,
well,
that's what that's
I really
what
did like.
Years.
So Neil Hamel is an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire Rainier is a, well, she's a librarian, but
librarian.
She's more than a librarian. She's in charge of the...
She is, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Center. Yeah. Well, you know, Rainier, my first ancestor who came to New York from Holland in 1650, his name was Rainier.
Oh.
That's where I got that name from. His name was Rainier Bastian van Giessen.
Oh, wow.
So, I like that name, so I got that from. Yeah.
Well, what made you decide to call your attorney protagonist by a man's name?
I'm not sure why I did that, actually. I was, you know, I was living in Santa Fe at the time, and I had a friend who was a lawyer. It actually was a romance with him, and he was moving to Albuquerque. And he got me, he was really a mystery reader, and he got me reading Raymond Chandler and all those books, which I really liked.
Yes.
You know, he's the one that really turned me on to mysteries. So, but why I did... I'm not sure why I used the man's name, actually.
Well, I liked it. I mean, and it fits her.
Did you?
Yeah.
Good. Kind of an unusual name for a woman, yes.
Yeah, but she's an unusual, very strong character.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. And I went to work for, after I lived in Santa Fe, and then I went back to New England, and I was living in Boston, and I worked for a law firm, temped for a law firm in Boston, which was a very prestigious law firm there, and that was kind of interesting. So I was picking up as much information as, and I also temped in Santa Fe for a law firm. So I was picking up as much information as I could about lawyers.
Right.
You know, while I was doing those books, yeah.
And Claire's really involved in books and old books and booksellers.
Yes. And, you know, my books became very collectible, and I got to know a lot about booksellers.
Oh,
through
good.
That. Yeah, I did learn a lot. And I had a very good friend, Tedesha Marquez, who worked at the library. And she actually, there's a character in the Claire Rainier books that's inspired by her.
Oh.
And when I wrote the first one, I said, Tedesha, you've got to read this and tell me if there's anything you don't like in here. You know, do you want me to change it? But she didn't. She was okay with it. Yeah, it was fun to spend a lot of time at the library. I like to go there.
And it's a beautiful library.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mercury retrograde is some, you know, it's an astrological thing when
right. The
planet Mercury is going backwards. So I could send you a copy of that if you like. It's all, you know, poetry and short stories.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I did start writing poetry, actually.
Oh, that's how
that
you started?
That was the first thing I did. Yep, when I first started writing. You know, because poetry is a little briefer. You can get
right.
it done quicker.
So how long have you been writing?
Oh, I started, I guess, in the 80s. The first book was published in 88. I think I moved to Santa Fe in the early 80s. And I was kind of, you know, I worked in publishing in New York, and I worked for the Carrie McCann, the publisher of John le Carré books, you know, and I got to know him.
Oh.
And when his first book took off, it was pretty amazing, you know,
yeah.
the success that he's had. It's really startling, but he's a great guy. I have some wonderful letters from him and stuff.
Oh.
And so then got married, and we used to go up to Vermont and ski, man, I married and I, Woody, and we moved up there, and he was working for a real estate agent for Previews in Boston and go back and forth, and then I started a real estate business there. And then when we got divorced, I thought, well, what do I really want to do with my life? And that was write books.
Okay.
So I went to I went to San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, and I lived there for I lived there for a year, and I started writing then, and that's when I really got into writing. Yeah.
Well, that's where you get Neil's background of spending a year in Mexico.
No, I hope it hasn't changed since then, you know? That was probably in the early 80s that I was there, but I don't know. And that's one of the things that brought me to Santa Fe, too, is because it was the closest thing, you know, up here to old Mexico, or it seemed to be to me.
Right.
And one of the things that's similar to Santa Fe is the way you can walk around the plaza,
right,
you know, and
right,
walk everywhere. And San Miguel Allende was like that, too.
Oh.
And it was a great place to live. I met interesting people there. Yeah, I really liked it.
Oh, my God.
And then I guess I went to Boston and was working for the law firm there. And then once I got published, you know, I moved here.
God, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, me too.
Of your 13 mysteries, which one's your favorite?
You know, right now I was a two and I was looking for something to read to you.
Yes.
And I would say I have I'm very passionate about hot shots.
Yes.
Because of the research I did. And something, you know, I hiked into that scene of that Colorado fire, into that canyon there.
Oh.
Yeah, I did with the man I was involved with then. And it was just devastating. You know, you really felt like it was a narrow canyon, and some of the hotshots that were killed there were women.
Right.
And I just really felt like I could feel their presence.
Oh,
and we went up there just a couple of weeks after that fire.
You know,
that was so powerful. And then hotshots, a couple of years ago, was optioned by a First Nation, you know, Native American filmmaker in Canada.
Oh.
Named Norman Champagne, and he works in the movie business, and he went into a used bookstore up there, and he had been a hotshot firefighter himself.
Wow.
And he came across that book in the used bookstore, and he optioned it for a film. And, boy, I was really impressed that he thought I'd gotten it right, you know?
Yes.
Since he had been a hotshot firefighter himself. And but anyway, that was fun. I enjoyed that. You know, I've enjoyed getting to know him.
Well, you obviously did your research walking the site, but also talking to firefighters and hotshots. You must have done that.
Yeah.
Do you want to read a little something from that then?
Hotshots, yeah. I'll read you. It was beginning to feel like the year it rained twice. We never have a lot of rain in Albuquerque, but last spring there was none. When May turned to June, it got hot. Rattlesnakes slithered onto West Mesa terraces. Bears came out of the mountains searching for food or drink, and coyotes crisscrossed the foothills trolling for pets. Most years when the heat arrives, the wind dies down, but this summer it continued, blowing West Mesa dirt across town, turning wandering trash bags into flapping black ravens, swirling dust devils down back roads and driveways, scratching branches against skylights, turning your mind into a house with wide open windows. My lover, the kid, is sometimes known as Ogreñas the Moped, but even his hair went flat in the dry heat. My secretary, Anna, kept her hairdo's volume up, but it took hours in the bathroom spraying and teasing. A control burn in the Cibola National Forest got out of control, and the smoke drifted 100 miles east of town. The air turned as gritty as a winter night when everyone's fireplace is cranking out smoke. It tasted like too many Marlboros and smelled like an overbooked campground. Mechanics playing with fireworks in Malloy Dodge's paint storage room set the place on fire, and it erupted in a cumulonimbus of black smoke. In May, the fires start in the southern New Mexico forest, the Lincoln and the Gila. Ignited by dry lightning strikes and exacerbated by squirrely winds, they fall summer north, flanking the Rockies, spotting into Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and Montana. It happens every year, and cycle assures life, aging, and death. But last summer's fires became history. The Capitan, the Black Range, the Weed, the fire on Thunder Mountain. They burned bigger and hotter than ever, and they didn't go out until snow fell in October. In mid-June, lightning ignited a blaze in the South Canyon of Thunder Mountain, 20 miles from Oro, Colorado. It was too early for a Colorado fire, but winter had been mild, and by Memorial Day, the snowpack had melted into the San Juan River and the Rio Grande, causing Class 4 rapids and fire conditions that shouted, "Watch out!" A fast-moving cold front whipped a small containable fire into a large, treacherous inferno, and 9 Duke City Hotshots. A group of highly skilled wildland firefighters based in Albuquerque were killed, trying to outrun the flames. 4 of the 9 were young women. They were about 10 years older than me, but looked 20 years.
Great character descriptions.
Well, that was such a fascinating subject to write about. Just hiking in there was an amazing experience.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I get very interested in, you know, we're doing pretty good so far, but I'm sure we're going to have some before summer's over.
We always do.
But I really keep track of them, yeah. No, they're very dangerous.
Well, I have to say one of my favorite characters is the kid.
Yeah, I like him too.
Yes, yes.
I actually was married to him.
I was wondering.
I met him. I had some friends. I guess I met them in Vermont. They had friends, mutual friends in Vermont or something. And they moved to Barcelona. And I went to Barcelona. Well, I flew out of the Montreal airport. You know, because really in northern Vermont, that was the closest airport. And then this guy got on the plane and sat down beside me. And he was tall, skinny, very good looking, with thick dark hair. He was from Argentina. And it was the kid.
Yes, that's a kid.
Ricardo. And he had gone to Canada looking for work, but he hadn't really found anything. So he was going to go back. So we went to Barcelona together, and then we traveled all along southern, you know, France and Italy, and drove around and all that part. It was really nice. And then he came back to Vermont with me. But eventually, he went to Canada. And when I was in San Miguel Allende, he was supposedly coming down to see me, but he never appeared, so I don't know what happened to him. When he went to Canada, he actually was working on the Dew Line, way up far north.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was, you know, he just really liked adventure, traveling around.
So it sounds like you really liked adventure, too.
Yes, I did. Kid, huh?
I did like the kid very much.
Good. I'm glad you did. I'm not writing. I've kind of stopped writing. I got so exasperated with the... I mean, I'm helping people to publish their books. I have my own publishing company.
Okay.
And I help them to self-publish their books through ABQ Press.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working in that sense. But I just got kind of fed up with New York publishing.
Well, I hate to see Neil and the kid and Claire disappear.
Vanish, yeah. Well, maybe Neil will come back in a movie.
That sounds like that would be great. Well, who knows?
It would be great if it did, and he would be, in my mind, the ideal person to do it. You've read all the books?
I have, yep.
All my... In order. Where'd you find them?
The library had some, and I bought several through Amazon. You sent me a few.
Yeah, you can always get them there.
Yeah. And some of them were in clearly used condition. So I had I read them from in the order they were written.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. You really see what's developing there.
Well, it was interesting to see Neil evolve in a relationship with the kid and, you know, her housing situation. And even her cars got better, too.
I'd forgotten that.
Yes, that was good.
Well, another book that was really very interesting to write was Land of Burning Heat, you know, about the crypto Jews.
Yes.
And I gave a talk at UNM, and I mentioned that I was interested in that subject. And you think, well, how do you write about people that have been practicing religion, you know, in secret for hundreds of years, you know? Who's going to tell you anything? And I met this man, came up to me afterwards and told me that he was a crypto Jew.
Oh, really?
And he was so helpful to me.
Oh.
Yep. And he said, he lived in Bernalillo, I guess. And he said that the old people in his house spoke in a language, the language that the young people didn't understand. So it wasn't Spanish. Mm. They understood Spanish. Yes, and he was so helpful to me. Yeah, I just thought that was a fascinating subject, you know, that they came here and they had to practice their religion in secret for hundreds of years.
Right.
Probably Jewish, some of them still do.
Jewish, but pretended they were Catholic.
That's right.
That was fascinating.
That was really interesting to do the research. for that book.
I bet.
Yeah. He was so helpful.
Is he who brought the idea forth, or where did you come up with the idea in the first place?
Oh, I don't know. I've just heard it about here. You know, ever since I've been in New Mexico, I've heard about it. And, of course, where I grew up in New York and New Jersey, there were a lot of Jewish people around.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and I like this quote I got from the Bible. I cared for you in the desert, in the land of burning heat. There, I got the title.
And that's what the title.
But his name is Jerome Aragon, and I said, I'm deeply grateful to Jerome Aragon for sharing his family's fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never could have written that book without him. So that was one of the interesting things, you know, the people you meet in places you go when you're writing these books.
Yeah, I think that in writing novels, the research is half the fun of it.
It is, and especially, I think, if you're writing mystery novels. You know?
Absolutely.
And of course, in mine, place is very important.
Yes.
And the places I go. And yeah, no, the research was really interesting. I like the part in Land of Burning Heat where she goes to the cemetery and is looking at the tombstone, and I did do that.
Oh, really?
The one is just north of Bernalillo, and it was fascinating to walk around there. Yeah, it really was.
Oh, do you have that piece right there that you can read a little bit of?
Yeah, I can read. Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Claire drove through the town of Bernalillo. The cemetery wasn't where she thought it should have been, beside Our Lady of Sorrows Church. It was below the on-ramp on the interstate. It didn't seem like a very desirable location, but the cemetery was established long before the interstate. She had seen it many times, but had never stopped. She turned off the side road from Route 44. Just past the cemetery, a lot full of trailers advertised with a large sign that it was having a sale. The sign was tied to the fence and snapped in the breeze. Claire parked and entered the cemetery. Surprised by the bright reds, pinks, and yellows of the artificial flowers that covered the graves, she'd been expecting a duller, grayer place. She liked to visit old graveyards and saw them as an illustrated collection of poetry and short stories. Stories could be found in the names and dates of the departed, the men who had survived wars, the men who hadn't, the women who had died in childbirth, the children who had died young, the people who had lived to a ripe old age, even in the hardest of times. People didn't live any longer now than they ever had, but a higher percentage of them lived to an advanced age. There was art in the symbols carved into the more elaborate tombstones, the birds, the crosses, the intertwined wedding rings, art in the ceramic figures left behind, and in the weathered wood of the oldest markers. Poetry could be found in the epitaphs, many of which were in Spanish. Claire saw, juntos para siempre, together forever, descanse en paz, rest in peace. And one she especially liked, para el mundo eras uno, para nosotros eras el mundo. For the world you were one, for us you were the world. It was intriguing to think that her ashes would eventually be entered in the wind, scattered in the wind, blended into the elements without a marker now that she no longer had a husband to lie beside in eternity. It would also be reassuring to be buried in a family plot beside her mother and father, her grandparents, and the generations before them, people she never knew but would always be related to by the substance of her bones. Someday, if her children made no deeper connections in the course of their lives, they might lie next to her, too. The cemetery celebrated family, and she envied the people here who would be juntos para siempre. But for her, it was a dream. Her family had been in America almost as long as the Santos, but the Rainiers had never settled in one place long enough to have a family plot that went back several generations. Rainiers were scattered across the country from New York to Arizona. Unless Claire was willing to start her own dynasty, for her it would be the water or the wind. But the Santos were deeply rooted in New Mexico and Bernalillo, and Isabel would be buried near her ancestors. Claire went to her grave and found it marked with a brand new tombstone. Isabel Santos, it said, descanse en paz. Hearts were carved into the stone, but Claire would have preferred the symbol of a butterfly. The artificial flowers on the grave were the right color, dark red, and the color Isabel wore when she visited Center for Southwest Research. A pebble sat on top of her tombstone. There were other people in the cemetery, but their attention was focused on the newly departed, not on Claire. Picked up the pebble and balanced it in her hand, thinking that holding it might tell her something, that being tactile would be better than being intellectual or emotional. It was hard not to get emotional at Isabel's grave, thinking she had already begun the process of turning to dust. Hard not to feel that if she had only been in her office when Isabel called, if the document had been safely stored at the center, her death might have been prevented. Claire took strength from the solidity of stone. Did people put pebbles on graves because stone endures? She knew people who collected stones because they liked the color or the markings, or because a stone reminded them of a place they had been. The pebble in her hand was an ordinary gray stone, crisscrossed by white lines, but if she stared at the lines hard enough or long enough, it took on the shape of missing clouds. She replaced the pebble, trying to find put exactly where she had found it. Her hand dropped to the top of the tombstone, and she let it rest there, saying a final goodbye to Isabel Santos, whispering, "Rest in peace, descansa en paz. If there's anything I can do to make sense of your death, I will."
I thought it was interesting how the flower she felt was, she said it was a six-petaled flower, and it denoted the Star of David, or could it possibly have.
Yeah, right. No, I just found that cemetery fascinating. I really did.
Oh, yeah. You said, cemeteries are all full of short stories, poetry.
They are. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
I want our listeners to know where they can see you, and you have a website at judithvangeeson.com. G-I-E-S-O-N. And there they can see the books and all about you. Mm-hmm. And that was Judith Van Giesen. This is Tracy Hales Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.